And you're listening to Saturday Morning Live. We are back live in the studio. My name is Mally, a.k.a. DocuVixen, and my co-host, of course, is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, which we are going to go to right now. His show also, he has a show on Yuhu Radio, which is Sundays to 4 p.m. We're going to go to an interview with Motion So, who is a playwright, a spoken word artist, and an all-around artist in Toronto. So we're going to go to that, and we will be back at the top of the hour with a man.
Listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali. The bluesologist speaking to you from Toronto, Canada. Joining me on the line is Wendy Motion, and she is MC, poet, and playwright, and she just had a nice play, Anima Spot, which played here in Toronto and in Mississauga, which is a suburb of Toronto, and we've never had her on Diasporic Music before, but we've had her on many shows in Toronto. And how are you doing today, my good friend?
I am great. Thank you very much for inviting me to be with you today, Mr. Norman Otis.
Now, you have a long history of doing a lot of great things. Can you talk about, first of all, let's talk about some of the books, your two collections of poetry.
Yes, I have published two books of poetry. One is called Motion in Poetry, which was my first collection, and the follow-up is 40 Days. And they're both released on Women's Press, part of CSPI Press, and now 3 O'Clock Press, where I had a chance to imprint, basically express the spoken word and rhyme and lyricism background and traditions that I create in. So those are my two collections that people can read, so that you can actually see some of my oral work, but on the page.
Mm-hmm. Now, you didn't put in your bio, you used to do a radio show. How would you describe the radio show that you did? Would you say it was a hip-hop show or hip-hop plus other?
Well, definitely, I would say I was one of the founding members, or I am one of the founding members of the Master Plan show, which is currently the longest running hip-hop show in Canada. Also was one of the first women hosting a radio show on the North Side, a hip-hop radio show. As part of that founding team, I was on the station for over a decade, and the show continues, which is amazing because it helps to span over various hip hop generations, not only musically and creatively, but also connecting the industry, connecting the community, connecting the scene. We had the great pleasure of being able to break a lot of artists, Canadian and Toronto-based artists through the show, as well as also being able to connect, be a voice for connecting not just art-based programming and issues, but also community, political things that were going on in the city. We would have anybody from Crazy Legs from New York City, but also be able to do an interview with Dudley Laws, so the late great Dudley Laws. So it's definitely a very important experience in my life, and I definitely have to pick up DTS and DJ Romeo, Lottie Dottie, and all those who continue the work at the Master Plan show, and I'm very proud to be part of the alumni of CIUT 89.5.
Well, let me say that we wanted to talk about Anima's spot futuristically, before we end this interview, but yeah. I basically wanted to talk about get your views on the state of black theater in Toronto. And did you know, or do you know, of Vera Cudjoe? And are you familiar with the history of black theater in Toronto? And how much do you know about the history of black theater in the city of Toronto?
Well, I know one thing is that I'm definitely definitely stand on the shoulders of those Toronto artists who have helped to build a theater scene in this city and consequently in the country. I've been very much supported with Obsidian Theater, which was founded by some very key and prominent theater artists in the city, who have helped to set the foundation now for people like myself to continue the work. Also, I think theater has been a very, very important part of our voice here, being able to bring out our community to sit and listen to our stories. And I think that when I saw the crowd and the audiences who came to see Anima's spot over the past couple of weeks, it really reminded me of when I was growing up and going to different community events and theater events that were put on by foundation artists in the city when I was coming up, and saying, this obviously, our community is hungry for this. We just need to continue to make stories that they want to hear and that's relevant to them, and then spread the word so that they will now come and fill the seats and support live theater. It's all about the stories and it's all about the connection.
Well, don't you? I'm speaking with Wendy Motion, who is an MC, poet, and playwright, and did a little bit of radio. But I wanted to ask you, the play that you did, basically, Anima's Spot was a very hard-hitting play, very realistic, almost too realistic, a lot of choice words, speaking in a language that people speak. And I was there, I think, Saturday night, and you closed it on Sunday. You had a Sunday show, but Saturday night, I understand, was packed, and Friday night was packed there.
That's right.
The whole question of social media, the way you guys use social media to promote your plays, this that's relatively a new phenomenon, because you know, in ancient times, in the 60s and 70s, when you know, people started theater, they probably still using mimeograph machines and that kind
right.
that sort of stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But you guys, talk about how you promoted this show.
Well, for this show, what we did was we tried to hit it off on as many mediums as possible. We had a great team, right from the actors, Shamari Downer and Amanda Paris, a wonderful music director, DJ Eloquence. We also had our director, Charles Officer, all who have their own connections and their own social media, I guess, life and networks. And so what we strove to do was to connect on different mediums. So, for instance, we had we dropped an all Toronto soundscape called the Nima Spot Mixtape Part 2. Part 1 came out in 2012 when we did our first full production at the Summer Works Festival. Part 2, mixed by DJ Eloquence, is currently on SoundCloud and on YouTube. So we were able to hit people and the artists that we were promoting through the mixtape, who now also became, you know, part of the stakeholders of this play by showing that we have really, really amazing music that's coming out of the city right now. And because we wanted to make sure that this was deemed as a Toronto story, it's a story that's written in the language, in the vernacular, in the mentality, and as a local story, but it also has universal themes. Secondly, we also dropped an edited trailer. We worked with Amber Williams King, who is a wonderful emerging photographer, to create the images that would be able to showcase visually what we, the part of the story, tell the story visually before people even walked into the theater. And our designer Riyadh also designed many different types of images that could be connected to different audiences. So we had an image that could drop for a younger audience, like a youth-based audience. We had an image that would connect to a more mature audience, and we tried to basically be, you know, sort of test things out and be as diverse as possible. So when we talk about word, sound, image, and power, that is sort of our social media strategy. And then lastly, connecting to the blogs, people like One Love TO and badperm.com and Hip Hop Canada and How She Hustles, etc. A lot of blogs then came on to do manifesto.ca. They also all came on to do giveaways for the play, and therefore also connecting to their social media network. So social media was definitely used in basically all the avenues that we were able to at the time, and it's something that we will continue to build upon for subsequent projects.
Let me say this before. I want you to talk about the play itself, but before you do that, I wanted to mention Charles Officer. Charles Officer did a film called On Harry Jerome, who was a great African sprinter, born in Canada. I think he made his contribution, or I think he went to school in Oregon. But I remember when I was growing up, the only Canadians that I knew coming from California, I'll say this very publicly, but I only knew Norman Bethune because he was with Mao Zedong. And and I knew Harry Jerome because he ran in the 1960-64 and 1968 Olympics. And I was really impressed. Harry Jerome, I think, was a Commonwealth champion. I know he went to Jamaica and he had the world record at one time. But I would advise everybody to, you know, go to Google Charles Officer and Harry Jerome, and take a look at that. Look at that film.
Actually, right now Charles is on a Cross Canada tour, school tour, showcasing that documentary to schools across the country. Currently for Black History Month, and you know, it was really, really amazing to work with him, because we really had a chance to explore both not only the theatrical parameters of Anima Spot, but also the filmic qualities of Anima Spot through his direction and through his eye. So expanding what, just some of the traditional strategies of theater, but through a film director's eye. He's so amazing, so talented, and has a great vision, and I was really, really honored to have him on this project, and I do implore people to continue to look out for his work. That one that you mentioned, the Harry Jerome, as well as the Nurse Spider Boy, which is his debut feature film, a really beautiful film that's also a Toronto story, but definitely a universal story about family and love and the Black community.
Can you talk about the Anima Spot in terms of when I saw that play? I mean, it looks as if it's taking place in Toronto, but that could have taken place in Detroit or mm-hmm. Montreal or
Chicago, UK.
Chicago the UK, or maybe in Stockholm, mm-hmm. Sweden, or you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, African people. But let's basically deal with Canada and the whole mm-hmm. question of carding and all that type of stuff that takes place here. That people, when people think about Canada, I guess because Canada has such a great healthcare system, mm-hmm. But the police here are not that kind. I get especially to Africans and other people with a little bit of melanin. Wouldn't you say that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that it's definitely a story that I feel anyone who's growing in what you often hear called the state of otherness, African people, maybe Aboriginal people, maybe any people of color who are growing in states of otherness or in a state of being deemed as a minority in these various countries across the diaspora, the type of angst, I remember somebody had put it, an elder had said to me, the angst that she found knowing that she had come to Canada from the Caribbean, to basically expand her horizons and have her family and give a better life to her family, but not realizing the extent of the angst that those who have grown up here or are growing up here in this generation are really dealing with in regards to still being deemed as the other, even though they are citizens of this country. But the story, a lot of that is definitely the backdrop, the issues with the police, the issues with violence, the issues with just community instability. The most important part of the story in my mind, and when I wrote it, was just about love. It's about friendship. It's about connection. It's about healing. And it's about how the connections and the deeper spiritual connection between women and men, or young men and young women, as the two main characters are Anima and Juan, who are a young woman and young man who have grown up together and are now in a state of, I guess, a rites of passage. When you come to that bridge and you have to sort of make the decisions that are going to change or affect the rest of our lives. And so that is really the space that I started writing it from, was seeing these two characters so clearly in my mind, and then just opening up my ear to how, without thinking about, how people are expected to speak and how we really speak, and just letting those flow out of my mind and into my fingers and onto the page. So there's definitely a lot of underlying layers in the piece. So I would say that the main part is just that quest for wanting to heal and wanting to survive, despite and in spite of all of the barriers that are there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And trying to figure out who we are in this context, and showing that, also one of the main characters, Juan, who's a young man, just showing that another side of what is deemed as the. Sorry, I hope that you can still hear me.
No problem. Yeah.
Okay, great. What is deemed as like, you know, the stereotypical young black man and how he's supposed to be, whether it's from, you know, other people's eyes or even from his own eyes, and showing that there's more to him than that. So I think it has anger, it has pain, it has sadness, but it also is funny. You know, there's also a lot of memory. It's also, you know, can be very beautiful at times, and that is what I wanted to show, just within this real-time space of one afternoon into one evening after a funeral, how Anima and Juan deal with the things that are going on around them as they vision and dream and remember together.
Yeah, he had him cooking the dumplings and the saltfish.
Mm-hmm, exactly, because, hey, you know, we have to play with those roles, you know, because, hey, a lot of brothers out here cook, you know, and they sort of play with each other's roles, the gender roles of what they're supposed to be. Like, you know, he's an MC, she's a poet, but there's times when he's a poet and she's an MC, and, you know, how they use words and art to communicate, because there's times when there's no more words. The only thing that they can use to communicate is their lyrics and their poetry. And so they speak to each other like that at times, you know, their dialogue and their conversation is poetic, but there's also times when the silences also speak volumes. The music is also part of the storytelling and has definitely emerged as a character in this last production. The type of music that we use, some of the artists like Rich Kid and production by Eloquence, Ian Kamau, the lyrically, those lyrics are also part of the story. And so I thought it was just amazing to be able to sort of work within that multi-artistic, interdisciplinary type of vibe.
Well, you know, is there any thoughts of this becoming a film?
There are definitely thoughts of that. That's something that I see in the future. And so now that this project here is wrapped up, now it's back to the game plan and seeing what's going to be the next step. But I feel that it's definitely a filmic piece, and that's always been one of my goals, to have this as a film.
Let me ask you this. You grew up you spent some time on the African continent. Your father, Oscar Brathwaite, and your mother, Karen, your mother is from Antigua, I believe, and your father is from Barbados. But did you live in Africa? Were you born in Africa? What is your relationship with Zambia, I believe, right?
Actually, it was Botswana.
Botswana, yeah, pardon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even geniuses make mistakes, okay.
Oh, no, that's all good. It wasn't too far. But, yeah, so at a very important stage in my own life, I was when my father decided he wanted to leave Toronto and go to Africa, that actually opened up the door for me to spend almost a year there when I was still quite young. And it was a very, very important experience, because at a young age, it opened up my eyes to a bigger world, and also to a world where, you know, where black people were the majority, running their own country, looking at a context where just a African context, a continental context, and it definitely had a great impact on me, you know, that stands to this day. So, yeah, that's what happened there.
Well, your uncle is Odi Mumba Kwamdela, and he
right.
is a,
I'm looking at a poet.
Yeah, and his first book was Niggas, This Is Canada, caused a real storm, mm-hmm. and that is no longer in the system here. Mm-hmm. And he recently did a book on Sparrow,
right?
And, the Mighty Sparrow, and Odimumba is in Brooklyn, yeah. I believe, right?
Brooklyn, that's right.
Right.
Yeah, my uncle Odimumba Kwamjala, you know, is basically one of the first poets and spoken word artists I knew of. His book "Niggas This Is Canada" is definitely a classic that I feel people need to read, especially at the time for him to put out a book with that title. You know, alone shows that his audacity and his gumption and definitely his no apologies approach to his writing and observations that he puts in his writing. Because as a young man coming to Toronto, and he tells a story of you know, those who came with certain dreams and certain expectations and, you know, got off that plane and, you know what I mean? And everything was so different. They had to community up, no matter where you were from, whatever island you were from, even, or if you were from the continent, they had to become just a different identity within this sort of cold northern climate. So, I remember seeing his record, at home, and you know, him with the afro and standing at a podium, and I just was like, wow, like that's my uncle. And I hadn't even started writing or anything like that as yet, so you know, just knowing that that's part of my lineage is really great. And I have other cousins and even my brother and people like that who are now like artists, visual and spoken word poets, dancers. So it's in the blood still, but it's good to know that you know, he has such a big catalog. And I would definitely tell, you know, all who are listening to you to check him out, especially check out Niggas This Is Canada, because that's a must read.
Okay, we're winding down now, but I basically wanted to say that your father and uncle, we had an organization called the Afro-American Progressive Association, and when we use the term Afro-American, we were using it to, like Malcolm X used the Afro-American to mean African people in the Western Hemisphere,
mm-hmm.
and we used to meet at the Home Service. Home Service, I think, is 941, it's on Bathurst Street, 941,
okay.
I think that might have been Third World Bookstore, but this is before your time.
Oh, wow,
and,
okay.
Yeah. And we had a nice we're a Pan-African group in the sense that we had African people from all over the Western Hemisphere, and the founders of the group were Jose Garcia, who was, you know, grew up in Aruba, another brother out of Chicago, and myself, and we with the first or the first. Meeting that we had was in 1968. We did a thing for Malcolm X, X assassination. It was John Carew spoke. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
John Carew, and there was a young man by the name of Ted Watkins who was killed in America.
Oh.
He was Ted was a football player for the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Oh,
yeah.
The Iron Tiger Cats. Okay.
He won a Grey Cup and. They said he was stealing some stuff out in California, but that's some more history we need to keep up. Is there anything else you would like to add?
Well, I would just say that, you know, those are the type of stories that I think that we need to know. We need to know more about what is the background of especially during this time, you know, that we call Black History Month, I've been really taking more and more to calling it Black Future Month. I love that the people have been coining that term because it connects. Like, you can't have a future without history. So if we are able to know more about our foundations here in this country, I think that we will build a stronger identity, a stronger empowerment of, and especially cross-generationally, because what happens is that we continually are rebuilding or rewriting the script. We're continually going back to the beginning and you know, doing things all over when we do have foundations. But the fact is that there's not enough, or hasn't been, especially from those times, enough documentation that we can refer to. So if these stories are documented, then we can see that, you know, just our, the longness, the sacrifices that have been made, the movements that have gone on, and see how we're a continuing of that, you know. And I hope that, especially now that we are definitely in an age of very, very, you know, just a really obsessive documentation, that, you know, as the generations move on, that this will not be as much of an issue, you know. So, you know, it has that this excessive documentation has its challenges, but it also is good. It's good in the fact that, you know, there's a lot there that will be put on film and put in on photos and audio and that we can refer back to. And I hope that even just like what you just told me, that these are the type of stories and facts and history that will be continually told, so we recognize really our lineage here, and then how we connect to the diaspora in general.
I think your father, Oscar Brathwaite, has a tape, a reel-to-reel tape of some meet of a meeting that we had at the home service.
That's
going to be problematic because we're dealing with technology.
Yeah.
If we don't digitize that soon, it'll be no good. So
right.
That's something that
things will get digitized. And,
yes, ma'am.
You know,
yeah.
Immortalized.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah,
so I really appreciate it, and thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. It was really great to talk to you. Thanks for coming to the play. It was great to see you and Owen Leach and my pops. And one comment that a lot of our team made is that we know that you're a real music man, because when the beats would drop, your head was always nodding. So we said, yeah, that is an official music man right there, no matter what it is. So we were giving you so much props. Let's say, like, yeah, we hope that we'll hold on to that musical passion, like, you know, consistently as well. I love that. So I really thank you for supporting it and coming out.
All right. Thank you very much.
And just before we leave, please, can I let everybody know to please check out anemahspot.com. That's A-N-E-E-M-A-H-S. spot.com, you know, to check out the website, get the information, the bio on the team, listen to the music, and just keep connected to our future movements. And motionlive.com is also my website as well, so hit me up and let's keep it moving.
Also,
thank
this
you.
Show will, in about a half an hour, no, in about 4:30, you can go to UhuruNews.com, and you can hear this, and this show will be archived, so you can listen to it on demand. So you can
amazing.
Can add this to your arsenal.
I will, and I'll make sure that we spread the word as well.
I appreciate it, my friend.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right, thank
one.
You. And we have been speaking with Motion, the MC poet and playwright, and diasporic music on Uhuru Radio continues with our tribute to Bunny Ruggs.
And you're listening to Saturday Morning Live. This is Radio Regent, and that was an interview done on Uhuru Radio, which is on diasporic music every Sunday, 2 to 4. And we're going to take a little bit of a music break, and then we're going to go to Amandla.